Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Mansplaining Human. I'm your host, Luis Fernando Mises. I am very excited to have Roger Ver with us today, tonight, at any time that you're watching this. I've been wanting to do this interview for a long time, and very honestly, I was a little bit frightened because, you know, big celebrity, pretty cool guy, smart. But that's another reason why I wanted to interview him. He's one of my heroes as well. So with that, thank you so much, Roger, for allowing us this opportunity.
Thank you for the opportunity, too.
Awesome. So, you know, just one-on-one kind of stuff. How did you become a voluntarist?
So I'd like to be able to say that it was because I studied moral philosophy, and that's what that pushed me over the edge to the common sense answer that all human interaction should be on a voluntary basis or not at all. But it wasn't actually. It was actually from studying economics. And the more economics I studied, the more I realized that if you want to have people have a high standard of living and enough food to eat and clothes to wear and, you know, nice, happy life, it's through free markets and not through government intervention in the market. And it wasn't until I had studied enough economics that I realized that even if you have these goals of you know, people having a high enough standard of living materially, the way you have to achieve it is through free markets. And I think it was Milton Friedman who said that one of the biggest mistakes we can make is judging a government program by its intended results rather than its actual results. And I think everybody wants people to have enough food to eat and a house to live in and clothes to wear. And they think, oh, if we have the government, you know, tax everybody and do all these things, then people will have that. But if you study the actual results of that, it's a disaster. People wind up starving to death and dying of, you know, thirst and hunger and the elements because they don't have the things that they need. So it was from studying economics that I became a voluntarist. And then it was much later that I started just studying the underlying moral philosophy that you own your own body and you own your own life. And I guess it's a really nice feeling, though, that what economically works and what's morally acceptable just fit together to have this wonderful outcome. And there's another guy, Carl Wartner, who was writing a collection of essays into a book that I read when I was younger called I Must Speak Out, I think was the name of it. And he pointed out that you hear a lot of times people say, oh, well, the means justify the ends, or the ends justify the means, rather. And he points out that no. The means are the ends. And if you use a bunch of violence and coercion in something to try and achieve some positive goal, all you wind up with is a bunch of violence and coercion. And violence and coercion isn't a goal that we should have. So anyhow, I thought that was a really interesting observation that the means are the ends. And so you can't claim that the ends justify the means when the means are the ends themselves. And I thought that was a bit of an eye-opener for myself. And these were all, you know, books that I was reading when there wasn't too much stuff online. The internet was just getting started.
Yeah, that's actually really powerful and deep. And it really makes me think of those individuals that claim or believe in, you know, the whole idea of the helicopter rides and just to get some really strong, I guess, tyrannical right wing person to just get rid of all the crazy, idiotic nonsense, and by then, you know, we can have fresh start. But no, like you said, the means are the ends. So we need to embody those philosophies. So thank you. That's pretty interesting. So from there, how did you end up getting into the whole idea of cryptocurrency? How was the transition? And it's a twofold question. Well, actually, let me just stay there. How did you transition to cryptocurrencies from there?
So my hobby had always been studying economics. And so the economics, you know, led me down the path to being a free market advocate and a voluntarist. And I've also always been a computer nerd. I've been using computers since as early as I can remember. And I was running bulletin board systems and, you know, designing my own web pages and, you know, doing all the HTML by hand myself. And I read all these science fiction books too, where you have these, you know, digital cash that these people on cyberspace are using to deal do business with each other, and it's beyond the control of governments. And then I remember reading The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. I don't know, you know, maybe some of the viewers will have read that. And it's such an exciting book. And, you know, it's been probably 20 years since I read it, but from what I remember, there's this colony of, you know, Earth people moved to the moon and they're trying to have their society on the moon. And all the governments of Earth are trying to boss around the people on the moon. And the people on the moon are saying, no, we don't need you guys. We don't need your government. Leave us alone. And the people on the moon start hurling, you know, using Earth's gravity to drop moon rocks onto the government on the moon, on the Earth, that's trying to boss around the people on the moon. And I thought, what an exciting thing where people now are getting independence. And if you think about it, you know, I'm from the U.S. originally. That's how the U.S. was born. There were a bunch of people in a far off land called England that were trying to boss all the people in the United States around and tell them what they can do. And the people in the U.S. said, enough is enough. Leave us alone. We're going to live our own lives. And I kind of see the next step happening with cryptocurrencies. Now all these people around the world that just want to be left alone have this tool that empowers them to be left alone, where they can just live their lives. And they have these, this new form of money that can't be controlled or censored or confiscated or, you know, controlled in the ways that, that the previous forms of money were. So it was like all this exciting stuff I read about in science fiction books as a kid finally became reality with the invention of Bitcoin. Now everybody has this, you know, online anonymous digital cash that we thought was anonymous in the beginning. Today we realize that it's not even remotely anonymous enough, but people are working on tools to improve that aspect of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies as well. So anyhow, the, you know, long story short, I was a computer nerd. I understood economics. And when Bitcoin came along, I was like, yes, this is what I read about in all the science fiction books as a kid. And, you know, I guess I'm still a kid at heart. So I was incredibly excited about Bitcoin when it came along.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And the whole idea of being a kid at heart is super important because it continues to have a fresh outlook on life. So you can see or have more creativity and keep moving on several things. So from there, Bitcoin, you jumped into it. And what's the difference between Bitcoin Core and Bitcoin Cash? Because, you know, there's, I guess most of us that are already into it know the difference, but for people that maybe are not as aware, why was Bitcoin Cash created and what's the difference?
So the best way for someone that doesn't know what's going on here to understand what Bitcoin Cash is all about is go and read the original Satoshi Nakamoto white paper. And the title of that paper is Bitcoin, an electronic peer-to-peer digital cash system. And so very clearly it's meant to be used as cash, which means you use it for payments for buying and selling things. And that's what Bitcoin was when I got involved in, you know, February of 2011. That's what it was all of 2009 and 10. And 2012, I launched BitcoinStore.com that sold more than 500,000 consumer electronic products for Bitcoin only. And that's what set off this entire wave of merchant adoption that we have now with, you know, Newegg and Expedia and Microsoft and all these companies. And it wasn't until maybe 2015-ish, a group of people got involved in Bitcoin and they started saying, no, Bitcoin shouldn't be used as money. Bitcoin should just be a store of value. And I know from my study of economics, you can't have something only be a store of value. It has to have a secondary use case. And it's because it has a secondary use case that it's even able to be used as a store of value. But all these people advocating for Bitcoin to only be a store of value, they should go and pick up an economics book and they'll understand that that's not possible. And I hate to say that it's not possible, but it's never, ever, ever happened in the entire history of the world. And I don't think it's likely to happen with Bitcoin either. And so these people managed to basically gain control of the main, you know, software repository for the main implementation of Bitcoin. Gavin Andreessen, who's the person that Satoshi Nakamoto basically turned over control of this repository to and the project itself to, who's been nice enough to share it with additional people because he didn't want to be the only person in charge of this. Then those other people that he shared access to this repository to then revoked his access and basically kicked him out of the project. And Gavin tweeted on his, you know, account recently that Bitcoin Cash is the version of Bitcoin that he got involved with in 2010 and that he's, you know, promoting. And I said the same thing. Bitcoin Cash is the version of Bitcoin that I got involved in 2011. And another great Chinese entrepreneur in the Bitcoin space, Haipao Yang, the CEO of Via BTC, then tweeted out that Bitcoin Cash is the same version of Bitcoin he got involved in 2012. And all of these people that got involved in Bitcoin early on and read the Bitcoin white paper are supporting Bitcoin Cash. So the Bitcoin core people, they don't want it to be used as money. They just think it can be a store of value in and of itself. And since they intentionally made Bitcoin core have high fees and unreliable transactions, well, guess what? When you have something that's expensive to use and unreliable, people are going to seek out alternatives. And one of those alternatives is Bitcoin Cash, but there's a bunch of other alternatives out there too, in the form of Ethereum and Monero and Dash and Zcash and Zcoin, and, you know, take your pick out there. So we've seen Bitcoin Core's market share since the split, and since even before then, just plummet. So it used to have like 99% market share, and now it's down into 30-something% market share. And for me, it's just heartbreaking because it had this giant head start over everything else and had this giant first mover advantage. And the current Bitcoin Core supporters are basically committing suicide with the Bitcoin project. They're destroying its first mover advantage. They've destroyed its usefulness in commerce. They've destroyed Bitcoin's usefulness, and they've destroyed the spirit of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's supposed to be censorship resistant money. The Bitcoin Core supporters have engaged in this massive censorship campaign, and they attack anybody who actually supports the original version for Bitcoin. If you don't like the original vision for Bitcoin, that's just fine, but don't hijack the Bitcoin project and turn it into something completely different than what it was meant to be from day one and what all these people got involved in. They love to demonize myself, the first person to start investing in Bitcoin startups in the world. I was the first person in the world to translate the original Bitcoin white paper into Japanese. They also love to demonize Jihan Wu, one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the entire Bitcoin ecosystem, who is also the very first person to translate the Bitcoin white paper into Chinese. And so these are some of the earliest, most, you know, passionate people promoting Bitcoin, and now they're being demonized by a bunch of Bitcoin Core supporters because we actually want to use Bitcoin in the way it was described being used in the original Bitcoin white paper written by Satoshi Nakamoto. If you don't like the Bitcoin white paper, that's fine, but you shouldn't have hijacked our project. And I think that's why there's so much animosity from the Bitcoin Core people towards the Bitcoin Core people. I'm sorry, towards the Bitcoin Cash people, because the Bitcoin Core people have stolen the project and have a completely different roadmap and vision for what Bitcoin's supposed to be than the original vision for Bitcoin. So they know Bitcoin Cash is the original Bitcoin and Bitcoin Core is something completely separate. And they'll attack me for saying this, but go and read the Bitcoin white paper. It's plain as day true for anybody that spends the 5 or 10 minutes that it takes to read the Bitcoin white paper. Bitcoin Cash is Bitcoin as outlined in the Bitcoin white paper. Bitcoin Cash is Bitcoin.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I got rid of 99% of my Bitcoin, moved into Bitcoin Cash and other cryptos. And I think that it's kind of like trying to pay people with pieces of art, you know, like just a store of value situation. And it's like extremely expensive to mail pieces of art. So it's not at all what was the vision of Bitcoin. So I totally and absolutely agree. Now, there's something that what do you think about this, that people are just getting in to make money off of crypto versus the ability to maybe disrupt the system, like the whole ability of cryptocurrencies to bring the status quo to the floor and governments, you know, not having that access to manipulating us and I guess bombing brown people in the Middle East and other things.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these Bitcoin Core supporters have and not all of them, some of them have good intentions, but I feel like, and certainly most of the people that just came to Bitcoin more recently, they've missed the entire point. The entire point of this is to strip away every single government on the entire planet's ability to control the money supply and do the horrible things that they do by having the power to control the money supply. As you mentioned, they love to build guns and bombs and tanks and drop those bombs and shoot those bullets at brown people living in other countries that haven't done anything to us and certainly wouldn't have done anything to us if we hadn't been over there dropping a bunch of bombs and causing trouble. So I don't know a whole lot about Muhammad Ali, but I read something about him online earlier, and he resisted being drafted to go fight in Vietnam. And he said something along the lines of, you know, I ain't got no quarrel with them Viet Cong. And that's exactly right. You know, you don't start trouble, won't be none, I think is a saying from back in the 60s as well. Don't start trouble with other people and there's not going to be any. So leave people alone. Everybody has, you know, we're all just human beings. We want to live our lives in peace and be left alone and not have bombs dropped on us or be bossed around. And if you're using violence or threats of violence on your fellow man who's not doing anything violent, you're the bad guy. You're the aggressor. It doesn't matter if you're wearing a uniform or working in a building with a flag out in front, or if you have a badge on your – in my book, it's just a costume, right? People call them uniforms, but it's just a costume. It might as well be a Halloween costume. You're just a human being just like me, and if you put on a stupid costume, you're just a human being wearing a costume. You don't have any more moral authority to control my life than you did before you put on your stupid costume. So if you're one of those people wearing a costume, go and look in the mirror. You're just a human being. Don't use violence against your fellow human beings. Don't threaten peaceful people with violence. If you're threatening peaceful people with violence, you're a bad person and you need to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And the rule of law does not apply to them. So that in itself just makes it lose all credibility to that entire system, because they are by de facto above the law if they're willing and able to do all these crazy things. I guess moving a little bit to the whole idea that I was putting a chart together with the prices of Litecoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash. They have some interesting, very, very, very similar patterns. Now, I'm not super seasoned, but I know that that's really, really rare. So do you think that there is some sort of I'll tell you my perspective and then you'll tell me if I'm completely wrong or not. I think that what's happening is all of these big bankers are trying to get in on it, on the cryptos, pushing with their weight and keeping a artificially low price so all of their buddies can come in, because they don't want to pay full price for Bitcoin or any cryptos. And then, you know, they're going to start selling all this Ripple that has been stable all along, move the floor, it goes up to, you know, whatever, hundreds of thousands, and then people stay with Ripple. So I guess like the transference of money, like people lose their Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, Litecoin, and they stay with Ripple. And these guys end up with the majority of crypto because they know they cannot destroy it. Is there anything of that sort happening in your eyes?
There might be. It's really hard to know. And there's this big giant ecosystem with so many moving parts and moving pieces and people involved and things happening. So maybe, maybe not. It's hard to know. And I guess, you know, all I can do is just focus on my own stuff and the things that I do have control over. And it's really hard to know, I think, at this point. So, but at the end of the day, when I'm looking for things to invest in or things to buy, they have to be useful. If it's not useful, then I certainly wouldn't invest in it. And I think that there's a lot of people that are still investing in Bitcoin Core. Bitcoin Core is not useful for payments anymore. It's not useful in commerce. It's slow, expensive, and unreliable. Why would you use that when you have a bunch of options that are fast, cheap, and reliable? So if you're investing in Bitcoin Core, I think you're making a mistake at this point.
I agree with that. I saw some interesting news that you tweeted about, like the whole idea of having a Bitcoin Cash card. When is that coming out? And is that going to be more like the Shift payments or more like the BitPay version?
I wish I could say it's out today. Go and sign up at bitcoin.com, but it's not out yet. And actually, the person that we should ask about that was the person that was just in the room with me right before we started the call. And unfortunately, I'll have an update for you the next time. But that was one of the things on the agenda for me to talk with him about this evening, is exactly when that's going to be available. But definitely in the next year. And the next year starts in, 48 hours from the time we're recording this.
That's actually very exciting, because that's the one thing, you know, that will be super useful. And I know that we're not supposed to spend our Bitcoin Cash or anything like that, but, you know, there's a couple of gigs where I get paid in Bitcoin and I have to pay my rent and buy groceries. So it makes it much easier and to be able to take away the power of the state.
At Bitcoin.com, we're doing everything we can to make Bitcoin Cash more useful. And that was the entire goal with the original Bitcoin, is to make it as useful as we possibly could in every aspect of commerce. And one of the tools to make it more useful are these cards, and to make it easy to convert to and from traditional forms of money into Bitcoin Cash and then back again. And if you have all the on-ramps and on-ramps are super easy and accessible to people, it makes it so people don't even feel the need to get off the Bitcoin Cash, you know, super highway. And so that's what we're busy building at Bitcoin.com. So we actually we're still in early discussions, but we're talking with a bank that wants to partner with us to do an exchange as well, to allow it, you know, make it super easy for people to convert old forms of money to and from Bitcoin Cash. So that's a potentially something that we'll be launching in the coming year.
That's a fantastic and very exciting piece of news. Thank you for sharing that. Before we finish, I always like to ask people, you know, what they're reading and what inspires them, what makes them wake up in the morning. I will ask you the same question. Anything cool or interesting that you're reading lately?
I love to read Bitcoin news on the internet every day. But one of the books that I read when I was maybe 20 years old that I just started rereading on an airplane flight recently, and I need to spend some more time reading it. But it was a I didn't realize it until I saw it listed again on one of the Bitcoin news sites. Said like, here are the top five books that influenced people to love Bitcoin. I'm like, I had read four out of the five that they were recommending back when I was a teenager. And one of them was David Friedman, who's the son of Milton Friedman, his book, Future Imperfect. And he describes all these different technologies that are going to come and change the world. And one of which he described in great detail is a public key cryptography and how that works. And that's one of the underlying pieces of the puzzle that was used to construct the Bitcoin network itself. And so I was rereading that again. I thought, yeah, this really did have a big impact on me when I was a teenager. And I'm glad I'm rereading it again. So for anybody that wants to have a really interesting read, Future Imperfect by David Friedman is a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. And for some, people that are so high performing like us, we need a purpose. So what wakes you up in the morning? What motivates you? What's your main mission, goal, frame, vision?
My main vision is to help minimize the amount of violence and coercion that people are using against other people in the world. And the way to do that is to build the tools to give people the ability to nonviolently resist those who want to use coercion against them. And I see cryptocurrencies as probably that plus the internet. I know those are some pretty darn powerful tools to do that. And I was reading earlier today about how both the US government and the Israeli government are putting all sorts of pressure on Facebook to delete people's accounts that are speaking out against whatever, the Israeli or US foreign policy is or domestic policy is. And I'm looking forward to some of these distributed mesh nets that are coming together and then social networks built upon that that aren't going to be able to be censored or controlled or manipulated by a bunch of strangers living in a far off city that, that never met us and don't know anything about our lives and shouldn't have any control over our lives. So that's another exciting step. So I've been investing in some of these meshnet projects as well that'll help build a distributed internet that can't be censored or turned off or controlled as well. So we can combine that with our censorship-resistant money and our censorship-resistant internet, and it's going to be a really, really exciting world and a very, very difficult world for these people that want to use violence to govern or rule their fellow man. And so I want to strip away the power from those people that want to rule over others. And,
that's
my goal, and that's why I get up each day.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's actually very amazing to hear. That's very honorable. And yeah, now on that, like I actually, my personal profile on Facebook got deleted because for a while I was actually reporting about the white phosphorus attacks that the United States was doing on Gaza. And I was like really going at it and just posting a lot about that. And suddenly my Facebook account, without any kind of notice, they were like, your account has been permanently banned. So, like that was so strange because I have posted all sorts of crazy things before and I'm even on some crazy groups on Facebook or I was, and none of those things ever really mattered until I started posting things about, the Israeli US conglomerate bullshit. And there's a lot of censorship happening there. And it's pretty exciting that, they're finally putting it out there that it is happening. That's pretty crazy. So thank you for your service.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they didn't censor the fact that the censorship is happening. So they might want to do that the next time too. So.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I really appreciate this interview. And again, we are with our friend Roger, and he is with Bitcoin.com. I actually have my wonderful Bitcoin.com bracelet that I was given by Derek Bros back in the day. So yeah, he's a cool guy. Anyway, if you have any comments, put them down at the comment section, and we'll be happy to post this very soon. Have a happy new year, Roger. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me on, and talk to you next time. Okay.